Snowball Spa. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Wednesday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to The Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal. Glad to have you along for the next hour. We'll get into some of the high school stuff that's coming up this week, tomorrow with the regionals, state tournaments for fall baseball, fast pitch softball. Kind of hit those, highlight those, everything starting tomorrow. We've also got high school football this weekend, or this Friday. District play continues, week three in district play. Let's talk about that. College football, it is one of the greatest traditions in the sport, Oklahoma and Texas. Coming up this week, both teams ranked, OU number 6, Texas number 21. You know, and it's one of those, it's just one of the best games in the country, bar none. The setting, the universities, the tradition, the history between the two, it's just awesome. And so we'll talk a bunch about that today. You know, remember, there's a great article on ESPN's website about what happened 20 years ago, you know, the Superman play, affectionately known as, around these parts with Roy and Teddy. And it's hard to believe that's 20 years ago, huh?
That just made my head spin.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that was 20
years
ago.
I can remember exactly where I was what happened and what I did when that play happened.
Me too. And a lot of you can as well, and we'd love to hear those memories. You know, there's so many different memorable plays, both good and bad, quite frankly. If no matter which team in this rivalry you root for, you remember plays, you remember people, you remember players, either that helped you win this game or that just crushed your heart. So we can talk about that. There's one stat that trumps all in this game. There's one that matters the most throughout the years, and I've gone back. Let's see. I'm efforting the 2003 final stats, but I can guarantee you it's going to be the right way, and then I'll find 02. There's one that matters, and then there's another crazy one that's just kind of happened, and it's an amazing stat. I know we talked about it either last year or the year before. And it was a streak that it was broken last year's game from Texas. Just nuts what they were doing. So we'll hit that. Now, last night, by the way, did you realize the Major League Baseball playoffs started yesterday?
I did.
I didn't. Completely.
I watched a little.
Completely. I saw a call. Did you see that? I'm going to find that.
A call?
Yeah, a call of the game.
No.
Like a...
When I said I watched a little, I meant like half an inning.
Yeah, well, I'll find it.
The Sox were up, and I thought, well, but it was cool to see because, I mean, the stands were full. It looked, I mean, when it's Red Sox and Yankees, everyone turns it on a little bit, right?
Apparently.
Especially if it's a playoff game.
Right.
Play-in game.
Yeah, play-in game.
Do we call it playoff? It's just you're playing play-in. In to get into the playoffs.
There was no Bucky effing Dent moment last night for the Yanks. They were pretty well pounded, but there was a funny one, and I'll play it for you.
Okay.
Dodgers Cardinals tonight. Man, the Cardinals, there was a point, I think September the 1st, they had a 1.3% chance of making the playoffs, and now here they are. And on the other side, the Dodgers won what, 105, and they couldn't win their division.
Yeah.
So that's tonight. Some weird moves in the NFL. Jalen Smith released by the Cowboys. You kind of understand that one. Stephon Gilmore released today by the Pats. Whoa. That dude was the defensive player of the year just two short seasons ago in 2019. What do you want to bet the Bucks have already called him with all the injuries in their secondary?
Really?
And yeah, I let you off the hook yesterday, but we're going to have to speak of...
We already talked about it.
We're going to have to speak of the fantasy football game. I just barely mentioned it. We didn't really talk about what happened. And we're going to get the trash talk started because I've got the commish today, or this week. It's time for the commish to be knocked down a pedestal or two in the fantasy football game. And by the way, if you start looking, we'll get there. But you start looking at the projections, there's been one team that has flown up the leaderboard. Okay.
Okay.
Flown up the leaderboard. I'll tell you which one that is.
Okay.
Big Elk TV, Paragon TV. You're going to have to help me a little bit with what's going on. I know Big Elk TV tomorrow, 2 o'clock, live streaming, live video streaming of the Class 4A Softball Regional. The Elkettes will play Blanchard at 2 o'clock live. It's Big Elk TV only. We're not going to do any radio for that. Just on the Big Elk TV. So you'll be able to watch the Elkettes and the Lady Lions. That's a 2 o'clock game. If they were to win, they would play the winner of Marlow and Tecumseh at 6. If they were to lose, they would face an elimination game between the loser of Marlow and Tecumseh at 2 o'clock. So we'll be there Thursday. I think we're going to be there Friday as well. Just won't be me. But I think we're going to be there as the Elkettes try to get into the state fast pitch softball tournament. Elk City-wise, there's so many things going on. And too wide a gap to get there, at least for me, on Friday. You know, if they were playing, if the football game was at Chickasha, that would have been a perfect storm. You know what I'm saying? Might have been able to get there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, to be able to, a little bit closer, but the home game. But we've got enough. I think we're going to have that covered. So I know we will tomorrow, and I'm positive we will on Friday, depending on what time the Elkettes play. It won't matter because we'll have.
Yeah, we'll have
Drew there, I think.
Drew will take care of that one.
Yes. Yep. And so that'll be good to get the regional softball. The Elkettes have been rolling down toward the end of this season.
One of the hottest teams in 4A right now.
No doubt about it. So we'll be there tomorrow and actually today. I totally forgot about this on the rundown. We've got coach and player coming. I just remember this. Danny Satilli and Coach Murray, 9:15 today, here in about 5 minutes. They'll be rolling in. I just now remember that.
Freaked me out.
Today's
man.
Wednesday, right?
Today is
Golly,
Wednesday.
I've been a day behind all week. It feels like a Tuesday. But anyway, they're going to be coming, so we need to get going here.
Okay.
So, you know what? If you want to hear about what's going to happen this week, we'll tell you. Danny and also Coach Murray coming in here in just a second to talk about Elk City softball.
Great.
All right, so some weird moves.
Was it?
Jalen Smith, not so much. Stephon Gilmore, don't you think that's weird? With the Patriots? I mean, it's kind of the Patriot way to get rid of some of these guys before you think they're done. And it turns out a lot of times they're right. You know, God, what was the defensive tackle from Georgia back in the day? Richard, dadgum. Anyway, went out to everybody thought, what are they doing cutting him? Richard Seymour, they cut him. He goes out to the Raiders, not as good. You know, Lawyer Malloy was a guy like that as the safety who they got rid of, not as good. As you thought, Jamie Collins was one of the more recent ones, a linebacker that was just a stud for the Patriots. You're thinking, what are they doing? Getting rid of him. And they make the right move. So, you know, Stephon Gilmore, 2019 Defensive Player of the Year. Seems odd to just cut him away.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see if they're right again. They have been most of the time in all this. It looks like maybe not right with Tom Brady, even though he's 100. And now Stephon Gilmore is cut by the Patriots. And as I said earlier, you have to think the Bucs have already made that phone call because of
the
depleted secondary.
Yeah, they'll do anything and everything to try to shore up their defense. Absolutely. So, yeah, you think you'd make a call. Now on the Dallas side, it's a monetary thing, right?
Yeah, Jalen Smith probably.
I think others are starting to – I mean, it helps when your rookie linebacker is playing like a first-round pick and then – you got Diggs helping out in the secondary. So I think that made it an easier decision because wasn't he due some money?
$9.2 million.
Yeah, it makes it a little easier.
Next year. And so and when you first heard it, it's like, what are they doing? Why are they doing it now? Apparently they've been trying to trade him
right. The
entire season, even into the last offseason, could not find a trade partner for Jalen Smith. And listen – you know, the risk that was taken there from the injury, you know, way back at the draft, you know, Jalen Smith was going to be a guaranteed first rounder out of Notre Dame, and then he got hurt, blew his knee out in the bowl game.
Right.
And so, you know, it was a risky pick that Dallas made back then at the top of the second round for a guy coming off that devastating injury. And he performed admirably as that second round pick. But he also was passed by. Vander Esch has passed him by. Keon O'Neill, who came over as kind of a hybrid linebacker safety guy type guy, has passed him by. And then also, you know, you're starting to get the rumblings of Jabril Cox playing better, the rookie. Mm-hmm. And so when it just becomes cost analysis, and when one guy costs a couple hundred thousand and the other costs $9.2 million, and you can't really tell which one's playing better, it's an easy choice.
Yeah.
Jalen Smith out, Jabril Cox in. So,
yeah.
You know, and honestly, this is another effect of what's coming down the pike with Dak getting paid, with overpaying Ezekiel Elliott at the running back spot. These are choices that end up having to be made when you overpay at other positions. Now, the Dak one is kind of a have to. The Zeke one is where the money starts getting tight. You know, but you know, and you could make the argument, well, if they're going to do that to Jalen Smith, why aren't they doing it to Zeke? Kind of the same thing, but. You know, that having that extra running back is, you know, better than, you know, it makes sense. But don't be surprised if that doesn't happen. Yeah. Coming up in the next year or so, you know, it looks like Zeke has regained what he was. But this time last year, I was calling for it. Get him out.
Yeah.
Pollard's just as good and making a tenth of the money.
And now the price tag on Dak is looking justifiable.
Sure. Yeah, well,
he's playing right now. And yeah. If he continues this upswing with his play and maybe finishes with an MVP title or something like that, everyone will go, oh, yeah, well, yeah, that's why he gets paid. Yeah,
because he's the quarterback.
Right. But to answer any questions that Cowboys fans like, well, if you get rid of this guy, who are they going to go get? Nobody. Right?
They already got him.
They already got him. Yeah. On the roster. I mean, what I'm saying is they're not freeing up or freeing up cap space for somebody in the offseason or anything as far as free agency or whatever. No, it's because you got to pay the guys that are on the roster right now.
Yeah, and also I think what you're going to start noticing in Dallas that's happened other places with the contract for Dak, the draft becomes so much more important because you need cheap young labor to supplement what's going on with the guys you're having to pay, Dak being one
so
of them.
So the main question outside of, well, everywhere, even inside Dallas and out and everywhere, I could already hear Stephen A. screaming, is this or is this not a smart move?
Monetarily, it's brilliant.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the only move he can make. Now, you know,
as far as on the field product,
is it
smart?
I mean, it's funny because before this move happens, all you hear is criticism of Jalen Smith, how he's lost a step, how he's not able to play like he was a couple years ago. But then when the move is made, it's like, oh, my gosh, what are they doing?
Right.
Well, you were basically asking him to do it a week and a half ago. Now when it happens, you're going to act like it was a bad move?
Yeah.
You know, ask any Dallas Cowboys fan. And the clear weak link in that linebacking core has been, A, the health of Vander Esch, keeping him on the field, and B, Jalen Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Smith hasn't been as good as anybody really thought he might be.
No. It would have been a nice story. And at the end of the day, this is a business.
It is.
So, wish him the best. I'm sure he'll land somewhere.
Yeah, it's funny because someone will pay him less.
But yeah.
But nobody else wanted that price tag either because
nobody would trade for him. Yeah.
So, it's another example of Jerry overpaying guys that he drafts
and
likes.
Maybe it's comforting that you can see him go, you know what? I'm willing to cut you loose.
Don't you feel like somebody else is making that call?
Oh, sure.
That might be comforting as well.
Yeah.
As we're trying to have some last-minute adjustments for Danny, unfortunately. Danny Sotillion and head coach Caleb Murray in here to talk a little bit about Elk City High School softball. Tell her, you know what, we could just podcast it and she can go back and listen on the podcast if she can't find out what she's doing. It'll be all right. They're here, regionals tomorrow, Class 4A regional over at Tecumseh. And the Elkettes come in as, I would say, what, the second seed in the regional and on an absolute roll. Winners of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in a row. And when you go clear back to the Tuttle loss at the 1st of September, man, what's that? 12 of 14. Yeah. And so really doing well. 27-6 on the year, 10-2 in the district. And now the playoffs start and hopefully get to the state tournament. Welcome, both of you guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, so Danny, pitch, shortstop, a lot of different things.
Yeah.
How has it been in your senior year being a team? You know, been pretty good, but this team has seemed to kind of take that extra step a little bit higher level than what it has been the previous couple.
Yeah, we just really mold together as a team. And having my sister, she's a freshman, really made the glue of our team and made us take a step further than we were last year.
Yeah, it was funny because, you know, I was there for the senior night to kind of be able to be a little bit of a part of it. And a lot of times you see, like, you know, the moms are a little bit emotional, maybe even the player. It was really more her that was the most. And so, you know, you could really tell there's a bond between you two.
Yeah, we're really close, and I'm glad to be playing with her this season.
Everybody else is kind of the same for the most part, a couple of seniors from last year off the team, but, you know, a lot of that core is still there. And then as the season went along, I started noticing it was almost like a variety show name, the Danny and Joe Show. Kind of explain, tell everybody what that is and who those folks are and that kind of thing.
Oh, me and Abby Joe, the catcher, we've been playing together since T-ball, and we've been a pitcher-catcher duo ever since we were little, and her mom made a Facebook post of the Danny and Joe Show, and oh, it's so cute, and I'm going to miss her.
but seriously, though, being able to play with each other for that long as that battery combo, it's got to be pretty easy for both of you because she knows exactly what's coming in this way, and you know what her mind is thinking about maybe calling pitches and what's going on there too.
Yeah, we definitely have a good connection and know each other very well and know our strengths and weaknesses and how to help each other on the field.
And I would imagine kind of everybody's a little bit like that too, with everybody, you know, the experience coming back. And so it's got to be really cool for that core to be in the position to where, hey, look at us. We're got a pretty good chance to be in the state tournament next week.
Oh, yeah. It's very exciting. The connections are wonderful.
Tell us kind of as the season started out nice with some wins and then got into the district play. And listen, they can hear us sometimes, they can't hear us other times. But Weatherford has kind of been the team in between you guys and the top of the district. And you go and you sweep them. How sweet was that?
Oh, it was so awesome. We just really wanted to put a smackdown on Weatherford this year. Just all of our support from like a student section and everything just really brought the Weatherford game to life. And all of us had so much... just so much energy to play, and we're so happy that we beat them.
Me too. So looking ahead, you know, we got Blanchard and then also Tecumseh and Marlowe. Tell us a little bit about what we know about the Lady Lions of Blanchard for tomorrow's game.
Well, we played them this summer and tied with them. It was 0-0?
Yeah.
Tied 0-0 this summer, and so it should be a pretty close game. We've improved definitely since the summer, and probably they have too, but it should be a good game.
So in your mind, from then to now, you talk about improving. What have you noticed as a player has been maybe the facet that you guys have improved in the most as the season has rolled along?
Our hitting has definitely been a lot better since this summer. This summer, we weren't really doing very good, but it was just the beginning of the season, so I knew that was going to improve. But now we are doing very well at the plate, and our defense is very solid.
If there is one thing in your mind that you think, man, if we could just get a little bit better for this week, what would that be?
Probably aggressive base running. We kind of stay back and just take one base at a time. If we push it and make them make a mistake, then we can score more runs.
We're hanging out with Danny Satilli and also Coach Caleb Murray. Coach, it's got to be fun with a group like this, 27-6, second in the district at 10-2. Just talk about how you've kind of progressed through the season with these gals.
Well, you know, I'm super proud of my team. They come in every day. They work super hard. Danny kind of hit on it. I think our biggest strong suit this year has just been team chemistry. And you kind of alluded to it with Danny and Abby Joe, but when you think about the whole makeup of the team outside of just a few, most have played together their whole lives. And, you know, that's important. And I've been telling the girls all week, you know, when you get down to this part of the show, everybody's talented. you know, we're going to go to a regional that has four really good teams. And so chemistry, being able to trust the people you play with and having a bigger heart, I mean, that's usually who what drags you through those tough times.
It's, I'm a huge believer in that. I think, and honestly, the younger you get, you know, starting in high school and then up, I think it matters even more because it feels like you've seen different teams here and there, not only here but anywhere else, where, gosh, you know, one girl taking the other one's boyfriend just derail. I mean, it just something as simple as that, and so it, when you see it, you know it, and just the little bit that I've been around, you could see how much they care for one another, both on and then off the field as well.
Yeah, I think that, like I said, that's probably been our biggest strongest suit. I mean, obviously, like Danny said, hitting has improved greatly, and I think a lot of people didn't expect that out of us. I'm old school. I told them our defense is going to drive our offense, and that's kind of been our motive all year. But outside of that, and I was very fortunate, you know, my uncle's been coaching a long time, and so being around him at Binger, it was team chemistry, you know, eventually, and believing in people, having to believe trumps talent on most days.
I know she's sitting there, but how nice is it to be able to throw her out there in the circle and feel pretty good about where you're at there?
I would take our pitcher-catcher combo over anybody in the state. Wins, losses don't matter to me. I would. They compete. Danny's been a competitor for us for 4 years in the circle, you know, and so when you have someone like that, it makes your job easy. There's no thinking. You roll her out there. She's going to give you your best. You're going to be in every game that you play in. The rest is just putting it around her to get going.
Tell us a little bit about Blanchard, the first game tomorrow. What are kind of some of their strong suits and for our fans to be looking for watching on Big Oak TV?
Blanchard brings back three quality pitchers. One that's really good. That's the one we faced this summer. They're left-handed dominant in their lineup. They got four lefties right out of the gate, nine holes a lefty. Got a little bit of speed, going to slap it. They're going to test us defensively. They're going to test us mentally. You know, they like to steal bases. I'll take my chances with Abby Joe throwing them out any day. You know, so for us, I think the most important part is we're going to have to be very savvy. And, you know, we've done that all year. And so I don't think it's going to be too big of a moment. I think our girls have prepared for that mentally. I think we've got them where we want them. And you know, it's going to be a dogfight. Danny said it. They're a really quality team. And, you know, but I take mine over any of them there.
All right. So let me ask you this, Danny. As the pitcher, is there a different, or how much is the philosophy different when you have, say, a left-handed dominant slap it, put it on the turf and run as fast as they can type of squad versus somebody that wants to sit back and try to drive it into the outfield?
Thinking when there's a left-handed pitcher up, not pitcher, batter, I usually think that I need to spin the ball more. Like, I obviously need to spin it with a right-hander, but it needs to move a little more so they can't read it very well, because most slappers get their eyes on it and just poke it down, and just putting more spin on it makes them not be able to read the ball.
So when you couldn't see it, when she did her hand motion, it kind of went like down and into a lefty, right? And so, but I'm serious though. Just thinking about it, if somebody could just kind of barely tap it down the third baseline, that's going to be the hardest play for the defense. So if you can get it spinned to the inside of them, does that help them to kind of pull it to you, second base, first base, and make those outs so much easier?
Oh yeah, for sure. And they'll foul off the ball or completely miss it.
So now, as the pitcher, you get an idea of the strike zone, right? What's happening? How much does that help you when you come up to the plate and be able to kind of know what to expect from the guy behind you calling balls and strikes and knowing what to look for pitching or hitting wise to be able to get on base?
Yeah, some umpires don't call the outside corner, some do. So I really make sure that, like, if I know they're not calling the outside, not to swing at those pitches, because most of the time I can't really hit those as hard as I can when they're over the plate. So I know his strike zone and know which balls to swing at.
Well, guys, thank y'all so much for joining us. I can't wait to be up there. Blanchard, 2:00 tomorrow afternoon at Tecumseh. So it's a win. 6:00 against the winner of Tecumseh and Marlow. Yep. A loss will be an elimination game at 4:00 between, obviously, the loser of that. And then, you know, win one, and no matter when that is, then Friday we can get there as well. I have a question, and I don't remember. Has the fast pitch team ever made the state tournament at Elk City?
I know slow pitch, but I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
I'm pretty positive that it's only been slow pitch. Been close.
Yeah. How awesome is that going to be, being the first ones, huh? Now, seriously, though, thank you all so much, and I can't wait because this team has something special about it. There's no doubt about that.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
You're welcome. Hopefully your mom was able to figure out a way to hear. If not, we can tell her how to get to the podcast, I promise. Danny Satilli and head coach Caleb Murray joining us from the Elk City Fast Pitch Softball. Thank you, guys. Good luck tomorrow.
Thank you.
All right, tell Jared to come back in here. He's not done.
He's not.
Yeah, he can't get a half day.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're good. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I told Sean I got all the stats. I'll just have it with me and I'll give you my lineup with him.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you very much. All right, Jared, come on in. Sit on down. It's not like a half day or anything.
Believe it or not, I was doing some work and listening.
Yeah, Corbin. Were you listening to Corbin?
No. I was downstairs getting ready for the Big Elk TV broadcast for tomorrow.
It's exciting.
And I was listening to the interview. It's gonna be pretty fun. I got a lot of confidence in this team.
Very exciting.
A lot of confidence. They caught a couple games this year, and one of those being the Weatherford game where the student section was there. I think I mentioned that one time or the next day. Great support. And hopefully, if they can't make it, hopefully they can go. But if they can't, then, you know, we got them covered right here. And it makes a big difference, too. And she said that, right?
Oh, yeah.
When you get a bunch of support like that. It's going to be good. I think they got a good chance against Blanchard.
I was going to look this up. I want to say that fast pitch softball has never made the state tournament.
Ooh, that's a good one. I don't know.
Oh man, and all they have is slow pitch on where I was wanting to find it.
Slow pitch, really? Hmm.
Anyhow, I'm almost positive that's right. And listen, I think there's a good chance that that's going to be a stat no longer by the time that Friday is over. Because it just, here we go. It feels like this team kind of has it.
It does.
There's a lot of chemistry there. I know I'm a huge believer in it. You're a huge believer in it. I think that matters as much, if not more, at times than who's got the most talented team out there. It matters. And having, the trust and the faith and that player, that girl right beside you, it does. And this one has it for sure.
Well, when you have that chemistry.
And by the way, pretty talented as well.
Well, they're very talented. And again, the chemistry and knowing it loosens them up in the dugout, loosens them up in the batter's box or in the circle on the field, knowing like, you know, if I mess up, if I strike out, if I pop up, if I boot a ball, my team's got my back. And that's something that is huge, and that's something this team has.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Just that extra little bit of faith that you could feel from your teammates, it just matters.
Right.
It really and truly does matter. So
and from the coaching staff.
And the coaching staff as well.
Coach Murray's done a great job, and I think the addition of Hunter Hayes has been
fantastic. I mean, we can't go past not talking about our guy Hunter.
Yes. I think we need to somehow, maybe take the wireless mic, have him go into the planet somewhere in the dugout.
I don't know.
Get some between inning interviews.
But you know what? I guess as it turns out, we're not on the radio, so you don't have to worry about any of that, anything slipping through the cracks, if you know what I mean, from a language standpoint.
I think you'd still have to worry about that, Aaron.
I mean, not from like a...
I know what you're saying.
Monetary and getting in trouble with the FCC.
Right. Well, yeah.
I don't think we need to worry about that.
I don't think we have to worry about that in a softball dugout.
Well, you just never know.
Would be cool. We should have asked Coach Murray before he left. It would be cool if he'd give us a, like they did at they do on the College World Series. Like after the third inning, can we get a quick interview with you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so how do you feel?
Depending on the current situation, I bet. Right?
Yeah.
Kind of like halftime last Friday. No, we're not getting an interview.
Yeah. Yeah, if it doesn't start out great, we might, you know, it was a great plan, but we'll probably not have, we'll probably skip that plan. No, but thank you to Danny and also Coach Murray coming by. That's awesome stuff.
Yep.
And it's going to be fun tomorrow up in Tecumseh with Blanchard first and then hopefully a game at 6 o'clock. That's what I told my wife. I said, well, going to Tecumseh on Thursday, hoping I don't get back home till about 10:30. Something like that, 10:30 or 11.
So, yeah, go over the schedule again.
Yeah, it's the first rattle out of the box tomorrow at noon. It's going to be Tecumseh and Marlow. They're going to play, and then the Elkettes and Blanchard will follow at 2 o'clock. Big Elk TV only. There's not going to be radio. It's just Big Elk TV, just the live video stream of the softball game. So we've got 2 o'clock against Blanchard is the first game. A win would mean a 6 o'clock start between the winner of that Tecumseh-Marlow game. A loss, then you go directly into the elimination game at 4 o'clock against the loser of that Tecumseh and Marlow game. So either back-to-back with a loss or there's a game in between if the Elkettes can beat Blanchard. And then any win, either game, guarantees play on Friday. You know, depending on how it works, we'll tell you what time it is. But if the Elkettes win one of the games on tomorrow that they play, they're guaranteed to play on Friday. It's a double elimination, 4-team bracket, and only one team will advance to the state tournament. So the winner of the regional will advance out of that double elimination bracket. So it should be fun. It should be a lot of fun. As I said, the Elkettes 27-6, winners of 12 of 14 since basically the 1st of September. And their only losses were to the district champ Tuttle, and then I think it was Del City. Which is obviously a larger class team on the schedule in a festival. So, been playing great. It seems like we've said that a bunch lately, you know, when we've talked a little bit about the smaller schools and then regionals are happening or what have you down the stretch of the district schedule. It's like, man, Elkettes just keep winning. And just keep winning, yeah. Actually, it was Norman North at the Del City Festival. They beat Del City 3-2, lost to Norman North 2-0. And then after that, just been really good. Really good down the stretch here for the Elkettes. You want to hit, let's hit a break.
Okay.
And we can come back. And I've got some amazing stats.
I love amazing stats.
I've got some amazing stats with regards to the Red River Shootout.
Those stats can be crazy at times.
There's one that matters more than the rest.
Okay.
And it's bared out in, I mean, the proof is right here on the bottom of my page. I'll tell you next. All right, coming up on Saturday, it's the annual trek down to Dallas, OU, Texas, second Saturday in October. Texas State Fair, crowd split right at the 50, half crimson, half burnt orange. Just the truth of it is, if it doesn't matter. I mean, first off, if you're a fan of either one of those teams, and you don't ever make it down to the Red River rivalry, you're doing yourself a disservice. Because as a fan of one of these teams, it is a must. It's past bucket list. It's just a must. You have to experience what it's like to be in that stadium, that old, rickety, crappy stadium for one of these games. There's nothing else like it that in sports. It's one of those things, and you can speak to it because I'm sure you've been as well. You can't, you know, there's certain things that you can overhype, and then you go, oh, that just wasn't it. It wasn't what I thought it would be. This ain't it.
Right. Yeah, it's one of those events you can't describe unless you've been there. You know, if you talk to somebody else that's been there and you're talking about it and they start shaking their head and they say, oh, yeah, well, remember when this happens, and, you know, pregame, postgame, whatever. And it's just not the game itself. It's the atmosphere of outside the stadium, the state fair. I mean, you always hear about it and thinking, yeah. How great could it be? But it is something that's really indescribable unless you've experienced it. And it doesn't even matter what the records are. what the game means, win or loss, for either team. In this case, this year, it's a little bit more. There's a little bit more on the line, which is great. It always boosts the excitement of the game. But sometimes, what year was it? Oh, you didn't was supposed to not even have a chance. Took them to overtime and won 96. Was it?
Yeah.
I mean, you never know. You absolutely never know in this game. There's been some wild outcomes. There's been some crazy outcomes. Some unexpected lopsided victories. It's one of those awesome, awesome games, and there's no game like it in the country because of how they set the fans
and the fair.
Like I said, the fair. Yes. Yeah.
And this is a conference game now. It didn't used to be. So that almost ratchets up the importance a little bit more, because these teams are going to be that have been in the same conference. They're going to be in the same conference moving forward when all the other things shake out. Right.
Right.
I mean, they're the two going on together.
Did you ever think the Red River rivalry would be a part of the SEC?
No.
Isn't that crazy
to
say?
It's pretty cool.
I think it's really
cool. Jumps to the top of the list of best games in the SEC.
Sure it does.
Just because it's at or near the top of the list of the best games in the country. And
how many games in the country are neutral site? Army, Navy?
Florida, Georgia.
Florida, Georgia.
And Florida, Georgia, they
kind of split.
They split it the other way, though.
Right.
They split it from the end zone and wrap it around
right.
one side and the other, where this one split at the 50 and wraps around the end zones. I've never been to Florida, Georgia, but I think the disadvantage to that one versus this one is I don't know that you can – because instead of it being, you know what, 150 or 200 yards away, the fans in the end zone stands
mm-hmm. –
you can, when you're in that stadium at the Cotton Bowl during this game and something good happens for Texas, you can feel the noise before you can hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can see the hands go up before you can hear the roar.
Right.
It's not simultaneous. Like, I mean, they're far enough away where the sight is faster than the sure. than you're hearing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you can feel that wave coming at you. And somebody, one side or the other, is going nuts every play.
Yeah, that's true.
It doesn't matter if it's any play throughout that game, there's a huge roar thrown up every single play. And that's just not – it's different. I mentioned the article that's on ESPN's website today, and it's reliving the Roy Williams play from 20 years ago. Oh my gosh, it's impossible to believe that was 20 years ago to me. It seems like it was just yesterday.
Still one of the
hanging out
time.
At Weatherford on Meadow Lane, and it was funny because there was really no cars, no nothing going on. You know, that was an early game.
Yeah,
well, I guess it probably is afternoon games back then. They didn't play very early and very rarely at 11. But anyway. And it was like it was kind of an eerie feeling. Then all of a sudden that play happens and everybody bursts out and all, it turns into like a block party.
Oh, yeah.
After the play happens there by Roy Williams falling into Teddy Lehman's hands. But, you know, it's not just that side. I mean, Texas has those same plays. You know, I can think of, you know, the Fozzie Whitaker long run in 2008 as the Sooners are trying to hold him, get the ball back for Sam Bradford to try to win that game. And Whitaker goes, he doesn't score, but he goes, what, 80-something yards down the sideline, setting up the game-winning score.
Right.
You know, I was there in 09 when Oklahoma had no chance, basically, going into the game. Bradford plays. He gets knocked out by Aaron Williams early. Landry Jones is the quarterback, and OU's defense is so good, they keep him in the game. Brian Jackson picks off Colt McCoy in the red zone, and it looked for just a second like he was about to return that thing all the way for a go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter. That's a Texas team that played Alabama in the BCS title game, and that OU defense was so good that day that they almost won that game. Almost won that game in spite of Landry Jones. And man, I'll never forget it because we were sitting in the end zone, and when Brian Jackson picked it off, it looked like he was going to score. And Colt McCoy ran him down, kind of had a better angle than you thought, and probably than you were hoping he had at the end of the day. and caught him at like the 35 or 40, and then you just kind of threw up your hands and went, damn.
Yeah.
We can't score from there. We're too far away if you're a Sooner fan. But, you know, those were, you know, and then I was there a couple years later, just beat down after beat down in 11 and 12 from Oklahoma, including 63-14 or 63-21, I guess, for one of those. But even those games, that it when Texas really felt like they didn't have much of a chance, probably, they still can, you can still convince yourself that you do. Because right. It's that game.
Right. Yeah, that game, everybody has a chance. And I think the key to that game is how do you start and how do you maintain that excitement? I mean, because there's going to be guys that are going to be juiced up and going crazy and going nuts. And it the key for me, if you're a coach, is and Stoops was good at it, Mac Brown was good at it, was containing that and using that to your advantage and getting a good start in these games. And I always thought that was a key. If you can get a good start in this game and you force the other team to continue to play catch up, then you got a really good chance. But this game I can't really get a pulse on this particular year because both teams have their flaws. Both teams have their advantages. And ironically, one flaw one advantage on paper for Texas is an advantage for OU when it's Texas run game and OU's run defense.
Funny you say that, Jared, because that is the most important stat in this game over the past.
I had a feeling that was setting you up, man.
Over the past 20 years, so from that 2001 game till last year, The one stat that has pointed to the winner of this game all but one time. In that entire period from 01 to 2020, there was one time where the team that led the game in rushing yards didn't win the game, and it was 2014. OU only had 103, Texas had 148, but the Sooners won that game. Outside of that one occurrence, every other time. Nope, that's not true either. 2018, I forgot to put a mark. OU outrushed Texas in 2018. A big part of that was that long Kyler Murray run that got the comeback started. So twice. 18 and 14, the team that won the rushing battle didn't win the game. So, you know, you're looking for trends in a lot of different things. What's that, 19 of 21 or 18 of 20? The team that leads the game in rushing wins this game.
I've heard that stat multiple times.
And it's funny you say that because since Lincoln Riley's been at Oklahoma as the offensive coordinator, Oklahoma has been outrushed once. And it was his first rendition back in 2015. And Texas way outrushed OU that day, 313-67. And the Sooners lost. Since then, OU's outrushed them every single time and only lost once in that 2018 game with Kyler Murray falling to the horns. Now, it's strength on strength, offense, defense, when Texas has the ball in this regard. Bijan Robinson is the best back in the Big 12. He's the best back Texas has had since at least Jamal Charles. You know, that I think that's one thing that people, when they look at the struggles of Texas, you think quarterback, you think offensive line, but they also haven't had that exciting Texas-type running back in a long time. Guess what? He's it. And he can do a bunch of things. If, you know, Deuce Vaughn was able to kind of exploit the linebackers of Oklahoma in coverage last week, Robinson can too. And he's the same threat to take it to the house every single time, just like Deuce Vaughn was. I actually heard Brian Davis, who used to cover OU for the Oklahoma, and he's down in Austin now for the American Statesman. And he compared Robinson, and people around here aren't going to like this, but he compared him to a name that defines excitement. You know what that name was?
Peterson?
Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, well, I scoff at that a little bit. You're right.
But when you look at what he's done, it's been a he's been good. And he's one of those guys that makes – when he's got the ball, you kind of set up a little higher and get a little bit closer to the edge of your seat. And so that's going to be number one goal for Oklahoma – defensively is going to be able to contain him. I don't know if you can stop him, but you're going to have to be able to contain him. Oklahoma offensively, has gotten the rush game going a couple of times, but it has not been consistent. O-line hasn't been consistent. The good news for them, though, the Texas D-line hasn't been very good either. They've only sacked the quarterback six times in, what, five games? And outside of those six sacks, have only pressured the quarterback four more times. They only have 10 quarterback hurries in the entire season so far. And it's not like they've been playing murderer's row.
Yeah.
You know, they played some teams that you would have thought Texas D-line could pressure, and they haven't been able to do it. Hmm. So it almost feels like a prize fight when Texas has the ball and a pillow fight when OU has the ball a little bit with the way these two teams have started the season. But, yeah, we watch the rushing yards, because
that
has been the telltale sign in this series. Who wins the rushing yards wins the game. Now, here's another one. And this is just – this is that means – I mean, that you can figure out how that happened. One team was more physical and all that kind of stuff. Now, this one is just – there's no explanation for it. Do you know how many field goals Texas missed from 2001 until last year's game at the Cotton Bowl? You know, we got it.
No. No, I don't know. Okay. I don't know how many.
Anyway, none. From the 2000
Cotton Bowl.
In the Cotton Bowl in this game. Now, they missed one. Dicker missed one, I think, in the Big 12 title game at Jerry World. Or he missed an extra point.
Yeah, something happened there. Yeah.
But in this game, in the Cotton Bowl, OU blocked a field goal in 2001. I believe it was Andre Woolfolk that blocked it.
Yes, that was 0-1. Yeah,
I believe
yeah,
it was
that.
Andre
yeah.
Wolf that jumped
yeah,
up and blocked
he
the field
about
goal.
13 feet
yes,
in the air to
yes,
do
yes,
it.
Yes,
yeah.
yes, yes. So from 2002 until last year, Texas did not miss a field goal in this game. There is no way to explain that. I mean, Justin Tucker was the kicker for a few years.
I
okay,
can explain it.
I can explain that. But outside of, I mean, come on. That is nuts.
I can explain it. I can, because this game's played in Texas, that's clearly an advantage for their kickers. Something about the smell of the corny dogs in the state of Texas. It's an advantage for the kickers. They need to play this thing like Ardmore or something.
Crazy.
Build a stadium at the Windstar.
it's just that's just one of those stats that when you start looking, you know, you start thinking, man, these guys never miss a field goal. What in the world's going on?
I know.
And then you start really looking back and you go, oh, my God.
So you almost – so to that point, you want to say, well, if you're going to come down, okay, OU's offense versus Texas defense, et cetera, special teams versus special teams. Everybody loves Barkich, but that stat right there is like, well, you almost want to – it's an automatic give to Texas advantage because they never miss a field goal in that stadium, this game.
And it hadn't mattered who their kicker was.
I know,
and
it doesn't matter.
Who OU's kicker was.
Yeah.
You know, the Sooners haven't been terrible kicking them. Let's see. 5, 10, 16, 21, 26, 26, and 7, 33. So they kicked 33. Texas, they made like 28 in a row. I know you, 33, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, you only missed 5. I mean,
I'd like to know the distance.
28 of 33.
Yeah.
That's
well,
not
I mean, there's
terrible.
One obvious from last year, right?
It's not terrible kicking. But and that's the thing about.
Wait. Didn't OU block one last year? Is that,
yeah, that's,
no, that's the one.
That's the one.
Okay.
So, in theory, Texas still hasn't missed a kick from 01 to 2020 that the Sooners didn't block. You know, they've made all the rest of them.
They've only missed one in regulation. Crazy stats. That's what I'm saying. The games like this, and any game can say this, any rivalry game, you just throw out the records, throw out, you know, take those stats, ball them up, and throw them away. Sometimes you just never know.
Yeah, but you can't take the rushing stats out. You have to be able to.
It has been the one constant.
And I do think that speaks to a couple of things. The physicality of the game, which team imposes their will, which team is more physical. And that bleeds over both ways, right? It bleeds over from your offense being able to rush it to your defense being able to stop it. And I think it also speaks to the emotion of this game. It's just different. It's a different game than any other that either team will play all year long, obviously, and basically any other than there is in the country. It's two of the most storied programs in the country playing in the middle of the state fair in an old stadium. Half fans crimson, half fans burn orange. And there's just wild emotional swings, unlike any other game, down there.
Yeah.
And I think some, and I think to be able to combat those and win, you have to be able to be the most physical team and have to be able to settle things down by rushing the football, right?
Right.
And being able to stop the rush.
Exactly.
And that's just the, that is the sign. That is the telltale sign stat-wise of who will win this game.
I do have a bold
statement. And that's why it's so interesting going into this one, because to this point, one side's been able to rush it and one side's been able to stop the rush. Texas been able to rush it. The Sooners are like seventh in the country in rush defense.
They only allow like
80 yards, something like that.
I think it's less than 60 yards.
Yeah,
it's
something crazy.
Yeah.
And on the other side, OU hasn't been able to establish it, and Texas hadn't been able to stop it.
That's
Arkansas ran right down the field over and over on them. But the Sooners have not shown the ability to do that yet, which has been a staple of that offense under Lincoln Riley.
There were glimpses of it in Manhattan. I don't know before that game what Kansas State's rushing defense was like. Statistically, I didn't check. I don't know. I know they were solid defense. I don't know rushing defense how they were. My bold statement on a Wednesday here is I think OU will have the edge in rushing, but I don't think Kennedy Brooks will be the lead rusher for OU. Yeah, like that one?
Really?
Yep. Moving on. It's 10:01.
Well, I can't wait to hear what you what that means tomorrow.
Yeah, to be continued.
We've got predictions.
I love it.
We got predictions of who you think it's going to be.
Bring them on.
Do you think it's going to be Rattler?
I do. We got a lot of rollout action. I saw a little bit of that at Manhattan. I think it continues.
God, I hope not. Sooners lose if that's the case. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.